Good morning. This is a talk on essentially an effort to build an electronic medical record for a 150-bed Ebola treatment unit in Monrovia, Liberia, an electronic health record, medical record that practitioners would want to use and which produced data that was useful and which the organization could learn from. I'm giving this talk on behalf of the International Rescue Committee. This is a medium-sized nonprofit organization, about $600 million a year, that responds to the social, economic, education, health problems that arise from conflict and disasters. We initiated this project when I was a senior clinical advisor for Ebola response at the IRC in 2014-2015. I also was the Deputy Director of Health in Liberia 2011-2012, which kind of prepped me for the job. I am now not part of the IRC and speaking on behalf of my colleagues and friends at the organization. As my wife put it, we're not going to have our child in the Congo. So I'm taking a break after 6 years being abroad. We have no disclosures. We organized this story essentially around three themes. One theme number one is that there's been a lot done for Ebola response. There's been heroic efforts, but essentially very little learned. Theme number two is that technology has advanced and knowledge about how providers operate under stress has been evolved to the extent that we can now use data management, sound, smart data management systems to improve care and learning. And finally, theme number three is that how nonprofit organization without too much experience in electronic health record and data management attempted to solve this issue. Essentially, we're looking to be able to see how are we doing as an organization in this objective of running an Ebola treatment unit. We wanted to simplify medical record keeping for stressed out practitioners, and we wanted to support evidence-based decisions in very complicated care. Outline. The background of the story was that in August of 2014, the government asked the International Rescue Committee to build a field hospital, 150-bed hospital, to isolate those that were infected with the Ebola virus from their communities so that they would not infect others, but also to treat those interned in a way that they could help them survive. The U.S. government would build the facility, but the International Rescue Committee, IRC, would provide the staffing, would procure the supplies and medicines, and would develop the systems necessary for the running of what amounts to a biosafety 4 field hospital. We didn't really want to take the project. In fact, we initially said no. But the direction of the epidemic seemed rather dire. At that time, and when I first came on from Indonesia, on September 29th, the CDC had the death toll at, or the WHO had the death toll at 3,091 deaths. 3,091 deaths with 6,595 cases. But the projection was that if more wasn't done, such as building more Ebola treatment units, that that number could rise to 1.4 million cases with 700,000 deaths. So we really thought, okay, maybe this is, you know, the time to stretch the organization. We also had confidence in ourselves. We had been in Liberia for 20 years. And when I was there in Liberia in 2011-2012, the IRC supported six hospitals, major hospitals in terms of human resources, hiring people, supporting them, procuring the supplies, making sure that we delivered. So we thought, okay, we can do this probably as well as everyone except Doctors Without Borders. But Doctors Without Borders was saying, please, we need other organizations to step to the table. So when you decide to take on something complicated, sometimes, ironically, it's best to focus on the one or two things that cohesed everything into a common objective and outputs. What I mean by that is we thought, okay, we're going to focus on data management and staff support. We thought we're going to focus on data management because this is what the medical record looks like in most places in the world. You see that the format of this type of record keeping makes an audit and feedback and learning almost impossible. If you could get through the handwriting, you would then have to get through the format, which would be non-standard, and then it would also be incomplete. Indeed, the literature on this, and this was provided by one of our field site members who did research on three Ebola epidemics as part of Doctors Without Borders, essentially found that in the 40-year history of Ebola response, that organizations had developed ways to communicate the medical record that essentially were not permanent. People would yell across from infectious sites to non-infectious site. They would try to memorize their care, and then record it a little bit later when they had time. They would take a picture of it, take a picture of the patient to jog their memory. Many organizations would have a written medical record on the infectious hot zone side, but be so scared of that medical record, they douse it repeatedly in chlorine so that there was no paper left at the end of the action. Essentially then, what does that mean? Well, in the 40-year history of Ebola response, the modalities of treatment have changed very little. IVs or no IVs, maybe some Tylenol, maybe some antimalarials, and that's why mortality rate has not really changed and ranges from 50% to 90%. We also thought about children, but you could substitute this picture of a child with that of a pregnant woman or a patient with disability. In the action, we were hiring people from all over the world to deliver care with different types of training and different types of expertise. But what is the dose of malaria for a 15-kilogram toddler versus a heavy adult? Or what is the practice of care for a woman who's delivering a baby with the virus and delivering their placenta and preventing postpartum hemorrhage and still keeping yourself safe and someone who hasn't delivered a baby maybe in 10 years? So we thought, okay, we would need to then develop systems to remind people what to do on the job. Just keep in mind, all this medical record keeping, all this sort of decision is taking place in a rubber suit, in which you have about 2 hours a day to deliver all the care that's required, all the care that is required. So we said, okay, we're going to develop a comprehensive electronic health data information system that not only is going to record data and show us reports that tells us and our donors and our partners how we're doing, but also is going to support providers in essence in the form of a checklist right when providers were delivering care. So our methods were, we had 6 weeks to develop this thing. We were to open the Ebola treatment unit at the beginning of December, and it was essentially beginning of October. And so we had 6 weeks to get our product on the ground, to test it, and then to have it present at the beginning of the intervention. I thought, oh, this is not a big deal. But then my technology guy said, this is a big deal. I said, well, look at the application Angry Birds, right, on the video game on the phone. I mean, how long does that take to develop? You know, this is, you know, easier than Angry Birds. Well, it turns out Angry Birds was developed in 8 months, although it did produce $200 million in revenue, and I thought the revenue of lives exceeded that $200 million sum. Also, just, it was a challenge. The IRC is a great organization, but complex. When you have a $600 million organization, it might take a month to get a pencil. It might take 2 months to hire someone on the job. Well, we assembled a team, and luckily the team was already there. And luckily this team actually had worked together in Liberia. We all just happened to be in the same place at the same time. We just added this to our our job description, and really was a labor of love that was characterized by many planning sessions and many meetings to make sure that we delivered on a product in which we all believed in. We attempted for partnership with other NGOs, of course. I mean, why redevelop the wheel? But NGOs is, you know, like really any other sort of community, a lot of really good independent effort, but sometimes the collaboration can be lacking. We reached out to MSF, but they were already scanning their medical record from one side to the other. We worked out, reached out to International Medical Corps, but they had decided on a survey method that didn't have the decision support that we liked. Reached out to Partners in Health, but they decided not to have an electronic medical record. Reached out to SAVE that had a platform similar to ours, but they wanted to test out first and make it available to everyone in January. So it didn't really fit our timeline. So we had to reach out, and we decided to partner with a private sector organization called Vecna. Now, Vecna had done outpatient care in sub-Saharan Africa, and had something called a Clinipac, which you see right here, which is sort of an amazing piece of hardware that provided internet, a power source, could be powered itself by a battery. So a lot of times you can come up with a great, you know, technological fix, but the thing doesn't turn on when you actually need it. So that piece of Vecna was really a clincher for us. And they said to us, with your help, we can adapt our clinical software and you can use our proven hardware to deliver on what you want out of your objectives. Finally, in methods, we have three sprints. I didn't really know what a sprint was, but it turns out is when you communicate, let's say as an NGO, to the person developing your software what you want. They then get their heads together and do all the programming, and then they come back with you with a product that's totally unexpected. And then you give some feedback to that, and it just keeps on going back in an iterative way. We only had time for three sprints to achieve the results that I'll discuss here. In the end, we delivered on a system that did what we wanted, but with trade-offs. In terms of what we wanted, we were able to put the software on waterproof tablets, electronic tablets, that could communicate across zones, but also communicate to managers outside of the Ebola treatment unit, and also communicate to us in New York City. So it was a very comprehensive system that worked pretty well, and the hardware really did quite excellent. Here's just a picture of IRC staff training on this hardware. We were able to keep track of the data in the way that we were looking for. For example, we could see who was going into the different zones by simply having them check in. We could also, say, take a condition of anxiety and give some decision support about, okay, before you medicate that patient, why don't you ask what is wrong? And then, by the way, if you need to medicate, this is the exact dose. We were able to look at patient data in a way that was very exciting. We could look at trends, for example. It was almost unheard of in the international health scene where you could maybe even power a study about, well, what is the course of people that survive or don't survive in terms of their vital signs or what they look like on the physical exam. But we had some trade-offs, and those were as follows. We had compromises in form. As you know, I was sort of fixated on Angry Birds and the idea of a really, really beautiful system. And so this is what I envisioned in terms of how people would order drugs based on problems in different organs and parts of the body. But then we got this. So, you know, and you know, it wasn't to me even as good as, you know, dead Angry Birds. However, this was the type of structure that the old Vecna system was based, and they could not just adapt it. You can even see our IRC logo was elongated, and it was very interesting to request certain types of features and not necessarily get them. We also had some compromises in decision support. The system was very good at presenting options based on what you clicked from left to right, but it couldn't do a simple calculation based on the weight of a patient coming in and the dose, and just to tell the provider, okay, this child just needs 500 grams of ceftriaxone. It also had some logic problems where if you were male and the provider made an error, you could make that male pregnant. And it was these type of things that, you know, I myself as a practitioner use an electronic health record, and I have to say that form sometimes reveals function, that if you become annoyed with how things are presented or what they look like or they don't seem quite logical, why is that male pregnant, then it compromises the data entry itself, compromises the quality of the data. So conclusions that we... one last piece on the results. I think we could have worked all of this out, right? We produced this in 6 weeks on the ground. But then the Ebola epidemic took a turn for the better, and that was really good. And in the end, the IRC decided not to open the Ebola treatment unit and instead open the hospital systems in Monrovia. Did a back of the envelope calculation. I mean, 4,000 people died of Ebola, but I would say maybe 20 times more people died of the everyday illnesses before the epidemic. And so we moved, and it was really hard for our team to say, like, literally pull the plug on the thing. But we decided that was a better way to go. So I think we could have gotten through some of these challenges, but the leadership decided to move on. So our conclusion is that we initiated a really valuable tool for future epidemics, a tool that not only collects data and mimics the paper record, but adds what technology can do to improve care, such as decision support or summarizing data, like Matt had talked about, in a way that is useful to policymakers. But I think it's going to be another 10 years until this really is global, something that's very logical. And the reason why is the system, NGOs, WHO, the CDC, is already sort of compensated satisfactorily to produce the results that we see. Just think about it. When I go into a hospital in abroad or go into a Ebola treatment unit, people just say, "You did such a great job, Dr. Wong. You know, you're just like a hero." But they don't know anything about what was done. So I think until that attitude changes away from just serving people that are ill to demonstrating that you achieve results, you're not going to see a system change. We also conclude that response agencies aren't computer programmers, and computer programmers aren't response agencies. So there's just a different pacing, a different language, and it can be overcome. And we had a great relationship with Vecna, and they did such a wonderful job, and we're constantly adapting. So as with anything, it's really about open communication, structured time, being very clear about expectations and outputs, sort of like being in a long-term relationship. And finally, we conclude that public and private entities, they have just a different way of doing business, and it has to be worked out in advance. Once I was working with Vecna down in their Boston office, and our version had crashed. And they said, "Oh, well, why don't we look up the version for this different organization?" And it was our version with someone else's logo on. So I realized that we hadn't really worked out the intellectual property piece. Another piece was like, we're an NGO. We deliver our stuff and we give it away free to ministries of health. But I think for their business model to be viable, they would have to charge subscriptions. And so that would put everyone in an awkward situation. You just have to work it out in advance, and it can be done. So this is just a picture of the end of the Ebola. This is the closing down of an Ebola treatment unit in Sierra Leone. People were very happy about that. So I'd like to really thank the people on the panel and the moderator really for teaching me about other approaches to health information technology and management. I'd like to thank the staff in the field that are constantly adapting and working. A lot of people thought, for example, Liberians couldn't figure out a touchpad, right? They never don't really have touchpads. They're easy. People thought, oh, this is really logical. Why didn't we have this before? So I really want to thank those people that are really doing the hard work in the field and constantly adapting to changing projects, programs, et cetera. And I'd like to just really thank the audience for letting us tell our story, which is really exciting for us and something that we really care about. Thank you.